Welcome to the Extensive Reading Podcast, where we take an extensive look.
No,
I messed it up. We'll leave it in. Where we take an intensive look at extensive reading.
Yeah, it's been so long. We're totally out of practice.
This is Travis. Along with me is
Jose.
And we are a little rusty.
We're really sorry about this last couple of months. We haven't been putting anything out, but
it's been busy.
It's been the beginning of the year for the two of us.
Yeah, here in Japan, as many of our listeners know, the school year starts in April. Mm-hmm. So our podcast output stopped in April, and it is now June. But we're back.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be managing to keep a pace and bringing in some material regularly.
Yeah. So today, the interview we have scheduled is actually really exciting. This was just from an email we received. So we're interviewing Jared Turner and John Pasden, who have a company called Mandarin Companion.
A Chinese graded reader series.
So this is a publishing company of graded readers in Chinese for Chinese language learners.
Yeah, so for those of you who liked our episode two episodes on Japanese graded readers, I think this might be a nice follow-up on that. The difficulties of doing extensive reading in languages other than English from a different perspective.
Yeah, and just, I mean, in Japanese we have hiragana, katakana, furigana, and, you know, I come to depend on those, so dearly, and I just doing extensive reading without those, I can't imagine. So I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
Hey guys, my name is John Pasden. I live in Shanghai. I've been here for almost 18 years in China. I came over as an English teacher thinking I'd stay for a year or two, and ended up doing my master's in applied linguistics in Shanghai using Chinese. And my first real job with that as my background was working at a company called Chinese Pod, a podcast that teaches Chinese. And so I became the academic director and oversaw like thousands of podcasts, and I was one of the main hosts. And so I had to figure out the best way that we should teach Chinese in this new podcast format. It was new at the time. Since then, I moved on to other things. So I have my own company called All Set Learning, and we do personalized individual one-on-one training in spoken Mandarin with sort of a business focus. And then I also have another company with my partner, Jared. What we do is easy to read Chinese novels, which you may know as graded readers. And I'll let Jared talk about that more.
Good. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, hey, guys. Yeah, my name is Jared Turner. So I have been living in China for about Shanghai for 8 years. I first just came to China. I didn't speak any Chinese, and I decided it was going to be a great place to live and work, and I'm staying for quite a long time. After being in China, I started learning Chinese slowly. It was after I was there for about 2 years that I ran across an English teacher who was really excited about extensive reading. And he's the one who taught me about it. Well, he didn't really teach me much about it, but it really piqued my interest, and I spent months researching it, and I actually got in touch with a lot of people in the ER community. I read a lot of papers, and I decided if this was something that was as good as it says it is, it should help me learn my Chinese, and I found a series of graded readers in Chinese, and in about 3 months, I read 10 books, and my Chinese went from really broken Chinese to conversational. Wow. And so that was my first experience with extensive reading, and it was directly applicable to me as I was really trying to learn the language living in China. Previously, I had been working in market research, and then I had worked for some Chinese investors, and then And then I started working on some of my own projects, and that's where John and I got in touch, and we started Manor Companion. So that's a little bit about my background. I'm from the States, and I'm actually kind of a business guy. So John, we have a great partnership, but John's more of the academic side of it. I actually have like an MBA, so I'm more like the business guy. That's just a little bit about me, and we've started Manor Companion together. Been doing that, John, what now, 6 years about?
I don't know where the time goes, man, I guess.
I guess so.
Mandarin Companion, right?
6 years and 11 books. Yeah.
Right, so I'm the academic guy, but I actually wasn't super familiar with extensive reading when I met Jared. And so he badgered me into paying attention to this this cool little corner of language learning. Definitely worthwhile.
Didn't I think I walked with you to your office to explain it to you, right?
Yeah, at the time I was much more focused on like tightening up the services for each of our clients because, you know, it's all highly personalized stuff. And so what he was talking about was quite a different, a different angle on language learning. Still obviously relevant to, learning Chinese. Mm. And there ended up being a lot of synergy between what I was doing at Allset Learning and what Jared and I created at Mandarin Companion. So it's been really good.
Yeah, and I think, I think our listeners would be particularly interested in hearing, I don't know, the peculiarities of doing extensive reading in Chinese. In a previous episode, we had an interview with a Japanese teacher in New Zealand who was doing extensive reading, and we kind of covered some things there. And I know using the Chinese characters in Japan, there might be some overlap, but I imagine it could also be pretty different.
Yeah, actually, I listened to part one of that podcast. I haven't listened to part two yet, and my ears perked up. Oh, by the way, I studied Japanese when I was in college too, so that none of that was alien to me.
Oh, great!
But my ears perked up when I heard the word furigana. Like, oh man, we don't have that in
right?
Chinese. Like, you don't just like this word's hard. You just put tiny little symbols that aren't English above, the characters or below the characters. It's quite different in Chinese. All right, I'll say a few things about that, and then I'm sure Jared will have a few things to add. So Jared was coming at graded readers from, an extensive reading in general from the perspective of English. And it's kind of nice when it's in English and everything's written in an alphabet and words are broken up by spaces.
That's right.
It's just so easy. So with Chinese, I think even more so than Japanese, the word boundaries are really an issue. So it's not just designing the graded reader in terms of vocabulary, but also figuring out, well, what is even a word? And then, of course, on top of the issue of just what vocabulary should you know at this level, what vocabulary do you need to tell a simple story, then there's the issue of characters.
Right.
So I have the challenge of dealing with cases where, this is a really easy word, but you need to learn two new characters just for this one word, and you won't learn those, or you won't use those characters in any other words in this entire novel. And in fact, it's probably not even two characters that you need for anything except for this word.
Right.
I'm thinking specifically of the word yaoshi in Chinese, which means key. Right. That's one of the words in our book, The Secret Garden, our first book. And we ended up doing it. And it kind of bothered me because, those two characters, you kind of have an allowance, when you're designing these books. And they used up two characters. So you just have to repeat them a whole bunch and just really make sure that when a learner gets through this book, they have really mastered this word and these two characters in particular.
They've got key down.
Yeah. But so that's always the thing that bothers me because you have a word where it's a pretty common, useful word, but the two characters are not common and, you're not going to use them in a lot of other words or you're not going to come across them in other words organically or probably in other books. And then you have the opposite situation where you have a word which is composed of easy characters that you know the learners know, but actually this word is not that common.
Hmm.
And so by including it in the story, yeah, you're giving them something they can read, but it's not something that's going to translate into daily life. So obviously the ideal is somewhere in the middle,
right,
where yeah, you're picking up some characters which aren't super common because they probably already know the most super common ones. And then you're also picking up some words which are fairly common, but use the characters you already know.
So are you using like the equivalent of Furigana in your graded readers, like only written in Roman characters?
I'll let Jared handle this.
Say that again, it broke out.
Sorry. So in Japanese graded readers, we have Furigana, as John mentioned, which is like phonetic symbols on top of the character, so you know how to sound out the words you don't know. Do you have anything similar to that in Chinese graded readers, only written in Roman characters?
Absolutely. In Chinese, the romanization is called pinyin. And pinyin's essential to know if you're going to try to, you know, learn the pronunciation of a character. Without the pinyin, you come across a character, you just can't really decode it. You could try to guess at a pronunciation, but you know that's not a good. It's not going to work out.
So I think during those 3 months when you read these 10 books, you had that resource.
Yes. No. It's a resource, but I also sometimes can call it be a crippling crutch. A lot of reading materials in Chinese, they'll have characters, but they'll also have pinyin over the top, over every character. And now this is helpful if you don't know any of the characters, but the problem is for us speakers of languages that use a Latin alphabet, that it's very difficult to not look at that and not read that. And if we're focusing on the pinyin, then we really miss the opportunities to reinforce our learning of the characters. So what our books do is that our standard, our level one standard, is focused on a base of 300 characters. And we assume that the reader already knows these. And when, based on our corpus analysis and our level standards, that if we introduce words and characters that fall outside of that standard, then we provide a referenced footnote for that keyword. Now, we don't put the pinyin over those keywords, but we have it in a footnote at the bottom of the page.
Okay.
So it's not distracting. So if you need the help for it, you can go down, you can see what the pinyin is, and of course the definition, because it should be a keyword that we don't expect the reader to know. We'll also have a glossary in the back that they can reference, you know, all the keywords. So we found out that's a very good method, because we don't want to introduce pinyin above the characters. You know, if the student even needs that to fully read the text, then they're probably not reading at the right level. If they require that, they're probably at the reading pain level. And so they'd do better if they move to an easier text to learn. But this is a big challenge, though, with a lot of reading materials in Chinese. You know, with a lot of teachers and educators and publishers, they'll put the pinyin over all the text. Or, you know, sometimes they'll have the Chinese characters and then the English translation on the other side. And I think you guys and a lot of listeners know from, you know, best practices that that's not always the best way to do it. It can provide, there's better ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's an issue for what we know as authors of Japanese graded readers, and there's different opinions. Mm-hmm.
You know, but this is an overarching thing. I think it's really interesting, just about Chinese. And it reminds me of a story. I'd been here in China about 2 years, and I was still struggling to learn Chinese, and I never like went to university and went to school. Everything was self-studying. But I had an opportunity to go to a conference in Barcelona. And so I was in Barcelona, we were walking down the streets, and here I see a sign that says restaurante, you know, and I see, you know, I hear someone say agua, and I see, you know, the advertisements and on the billboards, and I'm like, oh yeah, I think I know what that word means. Oh yeah, that's probably what this means. And I just realized, oh my gosh, you know, Spanish, you know, I could get this. I could, you know, I can begin to understand what is being said, and I don't speak Spanish. You go back to China and you see a billboard and you see, you know, splattered with characters. If you don't know it, you don't know it. You can't guess. You can't assume the meaning. If you've got some pictures or something, that's great. You maybe can have an idea. But that's the big challenge about Chinese, is that you run across a character, you just can't decode it. And it was interesting. I was even recently talking here to a Mandarin educator. They had a prominent academic speaking to a group of educators here in Utah. And he said that educator who I will remain unnamed was adamant that we don't need dictionaries, that we don't we don't need anything to do extensive reading. All we do is we're just reading in context. And the Chinese educators were saying, yes, that's great, but when we run across a character, we just don't know it. We can't decode it. You know, if a student runs across, you know, the English word discombobulate, well, they don't maybe know what it means, but you could try to sound it out and you get an idea. Chinese, you just can't do that.
Yeah, well, especially for Western learners, I envy Chinese learners of Japanese. I've seen them taking like the proficiency exams when at the same time as me, and just having that base knowledge of Chinese characters is envious.
Yeah, actually, when it comes to Chinese, if your goal is to have an adult level of, you know, at least rough reading fluency, there's this concept that a lot of us know, which is called the wall of characters. You know, you open up a book, you look at the page, and it's just like, are you kidding me? It's like every single one is like, you know, another hurdle. Like if you just look at the first sentence and focus on the first couple characters, okay, maybe you know most of them. But just this idea that you're going to get through this entire page is just like really daunting. So that's one of the things that we have to tackle too with our graded readers. You know, we don't have a picture on every page. We do have a fair number of pictures, but we also want people to be able to get through a whole page of text. And so, you know, we have a few tricks. The font size is pretty large. The line height is pretty high. So we try to help our learners through it because, you know, I remember how hard it is to actually read a page of text in Chinese. But we do have in mind the end goal, which is eventually you will be able to get through those walls of text, and it's doable.
Great. I have a question going back to what pinyin, is that right? I'm pretty ignorant on how that works. I know Chinese, a difference between Chinese and Japanese is that Chinese is like tone-based, right? There are multiple tones. Does the pinyin cover that? And would a learner reading pinyin or even the characters be able to figure out the tones? So basically, can just reading input be even useful for facilitating more output?
So pinyin, every character basically in Chinese corresponds to a syllable of pinyin. Like that's one thing that's easier about Chinese compared to Japanese. You don't have like one character with multiple syllables. When people study Japanese after studying Chinese, they're just like, are you kidding me? You have 10 readings for this one character? Like in Chinese, it's not uncommon to have maybe 2 readings, sometimes 3 for a character, but a lot of characters are basically just one. And so Japanese, like in this regard, is just ridiculous. But For Chinese, so normally each syllable in pinyin has a tone mark. There are four tones plus a neutral tone. So when you're reading a graded reader, if you learn a new word, you look at the pinyin, and it's pretty easy to pronounce it if you've been studying Chinese for a year or so, which is usually what you need to tackle a graded reader, one of our level ones. You can pronounce these words after learning them, encountering them in context in a graded reader.
Great, thanks. Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah. Could you please, thinking of Jared's experience, reading those graded readers 6 years ago for 3 months, and you said that it had an incredible effect on your ability to talk or to engage in conversations in Chinese. Could you describe it more? Give us some more information on it, some more details.
Yeah, great. That was a great experience. It's been it's a really powerful story that greatly affected me. And I think it was really interesting about researching and studying extensive reading. It was about 2 months in of actually researching it, and I was spending maybe at least a couple hours a day, researching this and reading stuff and looking into it. I remember I had even got in touch with Dr. Rob Waring, asking him questions about things, and that's when it kind of dawned on me. Well, gee, if this is as effective as it says it is, it should help me learn my Chinese. Thankfully, there was at that time a series of graded readers. They were kind of pioneered the Chinese graded reader method, and that's when I got a hold of those. And their level one was also 300 characters. Their level two is a 500 character level. And I thought to myself, oh, I've been studying enough characters. Let me start out with level two. That's where I'm at. And I got the 500 character ones, and it was really slow. I got maybe three chapters in, and I think maybe based on everything that I've read, I should probably go down to level one. So I did. And it was slow going, and I needed dictionaries still because there were characters I was unclear about. I was just forgetting characters, and we had a smartphone that I could trace the character into, and obviously that helps. I just started reading, and I was just reading on the subway to and from work every day, to and from my office, and. And it was really interesting because I remember about a month in, I usually would converse in English at the work, in my office, and I would throw in Chinese words, and the people could speak to me in Chinglish, words, mainly Chinese and English. But now I was starting to respond in Chinese, and I was just, I just opened my mouth and I could speak. And I remember one of my coworkers, Kelly, she's like, Jared, what are you doing? Your Chinese is getting so much better. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just reading books. I felt like I was cheating on a test, and I'm just reading a book and my Chinese is getting better. And it was a very neat experience for me. And I felt it. It was kind of strange for me because I felt my Chinese getting better. I just could comprehend people on the street, buying stuff. They were saying things I could just, it just started making sense in my head. And in 3 months, I went through 10 books, and I went through the level one books, stepped up to level two. And, but then I ran out of books, that's what I thought, hey, I think we could do this. And also the stories, this is something I think is interesting about what John and I are doing here with Mandarin Companion, is that all these, the texts, the stories, these books, everything that seems to be available for learners, it's written, it's like Chinese stories or their original stories. And a lot of them just aren't as interesting to Western readers. And, when I had this idea, she was like, Jared, you guys, you could do this. You could make your own graded readers. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. And I knew I needed someone who to help out with this. It's someone who had a lot more of the skills. And so that's when I partnered with John. But when the original concept of this is to say, hey, the idea was this, is that, hey, if you gave a student, a learner of Chinese, an American Western student, the choice to read, say, Journey to the West, which is a very popular Chinese novel, the Monkey King and all that stuff. So Journey to the West or Sherlock Holmes. What do you think they're going to choose? And my hypothesis was that 9 times out of 10, they're going to choose Sherlock Holmes because they're familiar with the story and that's what they want to read. And so we started Banner Kapan with that premise. And so what we've done is we've taken Western novels and we've simplified and adapted them in Chinese. And that's turned out to be very good, do very well. We hear that from the teachers that the students want to read these things. And we've got a lot of positive feedback because we're giving readers not just stuff that's at their level, but things that they want to read.
And also things that, I mean, if you're familiar with this story, it's just easier to go on with it, even if you don't understand a few words.
Yeah, I did that in Japanese, just reading old novels that I did as, like, I don't know, a grade school student that I found translated in Japanese, just to have that familiarity.
But actually, I think there's another perspective. And, you know, when Jared had this idea, I was kind of intrigued by it. And I don't necessarily agree that someone studying Chinese doesn't want to read about Journey to the West. I think if you're, you know, after hearing all these horror stories about what a nightmare it is to learn Chinese, if you still want to, then clearly there's something about the Chinese language that interests you. It's probably the culture.
The culture, too, absolutely.
You know, maybe it's the food. Maybe it's the inscrutable characters. But it could also be the Monkey King. I don't know. And so I think that does attract some people. But the problem is, if you try to take a graded reader, or if you try to make a graded reader from some of these classic, or, you know, even though they're fairly modern, these Chinese stories, they're very difficult to simplify. And a lot of that comes back to characters. You know, whether it's a character's name, which uses, you know, characters that only appear in the character's name, or whether it's you know, nouns that are used in the imperial court, you know, in ancient China, or, you know, all the verbs that you use for, you know, war in, you know, medieval China, whatever it is, that's a whole bunch of really difficult vocabulary.
Low frequency, so, too, I imagine.
Yeah. In fact, we have one book that kind of dips into that a little bit. We did The Prince and the Pauper. And so then we localized it, turned it into a Chinese story, while also trying not to include too many, like, super Chinese cult words that would make it, you know, not level one. Challenge to write that story at level one. It was The Prince and the Pauper, the story you know by Mark Twain. So it was localized into Chinese. The story took place in a fictional China. The characters are all Chinese with Chinese names. But, for example, it's a king, not an emperor. Uh-huh. It's the difference with the character.
Sure.
We had to make the vocabulary easier. If we had done a Chinese story, it's much harder to do that. And then if we do start swapping out nouns and verbs left and right, and we change the story too much, then some Chinese teachers might be upset with us because we ruined the classics, you know? So there are actually a lot of advantages to using Western stories that are adapted into Chinese. And another one is the character names. Because if, you know, you do a Chinese story, then you got to use the Chinese character names or it feels wrong. Now, typically, when you take a Western novel and you translate it into Chinese, you do these crazy transliterations that sound really weird, probably even weirder than when you do it with Japanese. At least with Japanese, it's easy to read, right? As long as you can read your katakana, you can read a foreigner's name.
That's pretty close.
But with Chinese, you got to do it all in characters. And a lot of the characters that are used for transliteration are not common characters. So that is not something you want to give, you know, someone who's trying to read a level one graded reader. So by taking those foreign names, adapting the whole story, and then changing all the names into a simple Chinese name, it also makes it a lot easier.
So you completely localize the story into...
Yeah, so for example, in Jared's example, Sherlock, in our version, is named Gao Ming. Or the pauper and the prince in the pauper story, his name is Xiao Peng. You know, they just have simple Chinese names. And they sound fairly, you know, common.
And what we do for the story is, you know, we've taken Sherlock Holmes out of Victorian England, and he's now placed in 1930 Shanghai. So we have an equivalent time period. Mm-hmm. So like, as I said, we actually localize it to China. And that makes things a lot easier. For example, if we even had to use the Chinese word or characters for London, you know, Lunduan, it's we have like, you know, two characters that they don't really need to know. And it creates complexity for the story. But that's all makes some challenging things too, is like, because, you know, some of the stories are written with, you know, really, you know, cultural influences. I mean, we're localizing to China, but now they're Chinese characters and peoples in the story. We have some fun, interesting adaptations sometimes, right? Right, John?
What are you referring to?
Well, I don't know. There's a number, I think, but I one that stands out to me. I remember when we were doing the Secret Garden, we were having this the kind of this debate how it was supposed to end, because in the original novel, there's the son and the father, and the son and the father, they kind of like, you know, they're not at odds, but there's just the very loose relationship between them. Spoiler
in my ears.
Anyway,
we'll add a tag to this episode.
There you go, spoiler. And he runs out of the garden at the very end and runs into his father's arms, and they like reconcile, and like, I love you, and tears and everything. But we when we were writing the story, you know, John, you were like, yeah, this can't happen. This isn't going to happen like this. Because in Chinese culture, you know, that's not how they show affection and show love. And but I'm like, they have to hug, and they're like, oh, they can't hug. And then we can't introduce the character for hug because it's this, you know, it's this difficult character. They're never going to use it again. And
yeah, we're not introducing a new character in the second to last paragraph.
So what we ended up settling upon was we had this. We created an illustration where, you know, where the son's got his hand on his father's got his son on his hand. So the father has his hand on his son's shoulder, and they're like crying tears, and then there were kind words. I don't know exactly what was said, but it was, you know, really caring words, and the son was sitting in the background, and so you get the nice feeling from it, but you know, you don't get this you know, embrace and, you know, thing.
Interesting, yeah. Very interesting.
I'm just thinking it must be pretty difficult, as you say, to strike a right balance between giving the learner a easy enough text to read and using the Western background to your advantage, and at the same time not sacrifice the peculiarities of the Chinese culture. So yeah.
Well, also we have some good writers too. You know, the writers are Chinese, and so they provide additional Chinese perspective about what's weird, and so I'm kind of in the middle. Meanwhile, Jared is advocating for all things Western.
He's hugged. He's hugging. He's a hugger.
Yeah, my goal is someday to still try to pull off an adaptation of Tom Sawyer, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen.
Let us know.
Yeah, Tom Sawyer. Not sure about that one. That one's rather American.
Exactly. It's hard. It'll be very hard.
Have you considered the possibility of doing the like the reverse process, like writing English graded readers specifically targeted at Chinese learners, where you might be rewriting Chinese stories only localized in the States or in any English-speaking country?
Nope.
I haven't thought about that one. If anything, I think our next step is to do, like, right now we have Chinese English graded readers, but, you know, I see that we need to be making Chinese Spanish, you know, Chinese Japanese. So ones that are for, you know, learners from non-English, Chinese learners from non-English backgrounds. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, due to the nature of graded readers, they're not too difficult to localize. And, you know, the market for Chinese is growing pretty nicely. So we are considering some of those other languages, especially Spanish.
That would be my case.
This is your guy here.
I don't know. I would think that anybody who moves to China to learn Chinese already speaks some English, and is, I mean, as Jared was saying, when Jared was in Barcelona, he could read most of the stuff you find in the streets, all the billboards or any sign, you can read that. So when you come to Asia, you realize the closeness between Spanish and English. And yeah, there's all the Latin words. So I don't know. I think what I would end up saying is, like, if you've learned English already and you're kind of familiar with all that literature,
I don't know.
Well, here's what I think, and what my experience. We actually have a distributor in Spain that we work with, and I mean, you have to think about it like this: is that you mentioned people who are going to China to study Chinese. Well, really, the percentage of people that have the opportunity to go abroad and to study a language is very small. It's not a huge percentage. So most of the people that are studying Chinese as a second language are not in China, you know. And so, like, every person in Spain who's learning Chinese, there's going to be just a small percentage that you're going to China. So and what we've experienced is that a lot of, you know, there's school children, it could be middle schools, high schools, independent learners. And while, yeah, it's maybe a lot of them do speak English, there's ones that don't. And even if they do speak English, it's still better to have a book or a text for them in their native language, you know, so that they can study Chinese and also have that support of their native language to understand the book and the novel.
Yeah, and I don't think you would really need to change much. You've already have the simplified Chinese written, right? So the hard work seems to be done already.
Although with Spanish, we probably have the, you know, the Iberian Spanish as well as the Spanish of the Americas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's that fun, you know, nothing's ever easy.
that's what makes it fun, though.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting to see how, you know, it's being used. You know, I think what we've seen here in America is that most of the students that are using the books are that we were getting feedback from, they're not so much the elementary schools. We find it's more like the middle schools and high schools are using these types of books in a schooling thing. And then universities are using them, and then we have a lot of independent learners. I was sharing my experience, you know, about extensive reading and what that's like. But it's really interesting. We're continuing getting stories from readers and teachers about people having those same type of experiences, you know, in learning Chinese. And it's fantastic. It's really exciting to hear this. I remember I had this one story recently an American born Chinese, and she had moved to America when she was a little kid and her parents were Chinese. And what's really common for, you know, people in the situation, their parents will, on the weekend, will send them to Chinese classes, you know, because their parents want them to make sure they learn characters. And that's really what happens a lot of times, these Chinese classes in the weekends for, you know, ABC kids, is that, you know, but she said that she really resented it. She didn't like it. And after, by the time she got into high school, she was still like at a low level. And so they put her with the young kids. And she was mad at her parents about it. And she kind of, you know, graduated from high school, went to college, and just being resentful to her parents about learning Chinese. And she never wanted to do it. But now she's in her 30s, and she's, you know, kind of her perspective has changed. She's matured a bit, and she's looking back, and she's like, gee, I really wish now I can't have a hard time connecting with some of my grandparents in China, and I really want to improve my Chinese. And she's just like, I've just gave up. I thought I could never learn characters. I never could learn, never learn to read. So then I found your guys' books, and I finally found something I could read. And she started reading slowly, and she went through all the books, and she's like, now I'm on to, like, you know, reading newspapers and, you know, reading, you know, novels. And she's like, it's changed her whole cultural experience and her ability to connect with family. And that's a powerful experience. That's a powerful story. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, I think for us keeps us motivated at times and helping moving things forward, you know. And it was even interesting, a lot of things now, which we're having, hearing from schools about, like, AP Chinese, you know, students are studying it and studying Chinese. But one of the problems here in America is that, like, you're in high school, you're required to take 2 years of a language. And usually after the 2 years, language classes drop off because the kids are kind of, I did my 2 years, I'm done. And so this happens with AP Chinese, just like any other language, and probably a little bit more so because it's a more challenging language. And but I've been talking to a couple teachers have used these, like using graded readers in their classrooms now. And he's having more students stay over to year three. And he's like, hey, and you know, my students who are able to read your level one and level two books, they have no problem getting like a 4 on the Chinese AP Chinese test. And the AP Chinese test are like from 1 to 5. So 3 is passing and 4 is like, you know, it's pretty decent. And that's really interesting. It's just really interesting and exciting to see, you know, the effects that, you know, graded readers are having in Chinese education. And it's exciting to be a little bit part of that.
Yeah, right? you're making me thinking of getting back to my Japanese graded readers.
Well, I think for a lot of teachers, graded readers are viewed as like a detour. Like, oh, you're getting bored with the textbook. We'll let you have a little fun with graded readers, and then we'll come back to the real learning, you know. Or, oh, well, this isn't on the exam, so all right, if you really want to read it in your free time. So, yeah, Jared was really excited by the idea that the graded readers could actually be positively correlated with doing well on a standardized exam like the AP Chinese exam. And they're not nearly as horrible as test prep.
That's true. I always say to tell whenever I'm talking to teachers about it, I say, you know, you don't, whoever read a textbook for fun, you know, but you know, who reads books for fun? And they're like, oh yeah, I guess so. But you know, in my experience in working with teachers and you know, Chinese teachers, it's really not. It's not that the challenges are not that different than, you know, working with English teachers. So it's just that they're the nature of the language is different. But, you know, we run into all the same problems. You know, oh, I don't have same problems. Oh, I don't have enough time to, you know, put these in the class because we have to study for the test, or, you know, we don't have a budget, or, you know, there's every other reason. The reasons are all the same. But it's just from a little different cultural bit perspective and just the differences in the language.
How many, for anybody who wanted to start reading graded readers in Chinese, how many of them are there around? Would you say there's like about 1,000 graded readers
in China? No. In fact, this could be a tell you, because I have opinions about this. I say how many true graded readers are, and I say true as in this perspective that is actually carefully graded.
Yeah.
It doesn't have pinyin or that romanization above the characters, and actually has a length, and it's not just like, you know, 500 or 1,000 characters long. So by that definition, true graded readers, there's less than 50. And I think it's closer to really more like 35 or 40 Chinese graded readers out there. It's not a lot.
How about the ones you wouldn't call true graded readers?
then you're maybe getting like three to four, maybe, yeah, maybe two. I would say maybe 300 at most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 200 to 300.
Yeah, there's some series that start at like 500 characters and they jump to 800 and then 1200, and it's just ridiculous.
No, it's 500, 1000, 1500. You're talking about the Sinolingua, right? You know, it was interesting.
I don't remember which one I'm talking about, but I know the jumps are huge and they don't start low.
Are they affordable?
Yeah, they're affordable.
But only money-wise.
Okay. As far as spending time might be another thing. We actually had another academic, a pseudo-academic, create an algorithm and did an analysis of our books and this other series of graded readers. And it was interesting that their level five, their first level, which was 500 characters, was less readable than their level three, which was 1500 characters. And it was very interesting analysis that they had done. But there's a lot of challenge out there with grading and leveling materials, but that's a challenge in general. Just in general, it's not easy to, a lot of schools and a lot of publishers and stuff still struggling, even internally in some of the departments of, you know, the Chinese government, the education, that are, you know, developing materials for L2 learners. You know, there's still a lot of debates in there. Hey, how do we level this? How do we, whatever the appropriate levels?
I think with Chinese in particular, graded readers fill a special need because, you know, I had a very different experience with Jared. Jared actually discovered Chinese graded readers when he was at a level to really benefit from them, but I never did. So I studied in the beginning in university, studied integrated Chinese, which has been a very popular college textbook over the years. Came to China, worked my butt off, like studying vocabulary and grammar in my free time and going out and talking to random strangers as much as I could. I'm not naturally super extroverted, so I really had to push myself to go out there and practice. And I get online and do chats. You know, at the time it was QQ. Now it's WeChat. But and I would like try to have chats with random Chinese people and see how far I could get without them knowing that I was a foreigner, you know, because I wasn't making character and grammar mistakes. And you know, eventually I took the HSK. I had to prep to get into grad school, you know, to do my master's in Chinese. And the scary thing is, through all this, you never really get to read Chinese for fun. I feel like a lot of learners have this like goal of being able to read a newspaper. And I was never super attracted by reading the news, this idea. But eventually, I did get to the point where I could pretty easily read a newspaper, and it was such a letdown. It's like, I could do this, but I don't want to do this. And so
I
then
could be depressed in my own language.
yeah. And so, you know, since then, I've found stuff that I like to read and cultural stuff that interests me. But I think a lot of learners who have decided to tackle Chinese, they go a really long time without being able to read something that's not just totally painful. And so for Chinese especially, I think graded readers are needed. These poor learners need a break. So I think Chinese is kind of a special case where even if you're relatively high level, it's like a breath of fresh air to read a level one graded reader. It's just like, oh. I've never read something so long. It's so easy. You know, you just start weeping.
So tell us more about Mandarin Companion graded readers. How many are there? We know a bit of what you're sourcing from for stories, but.
Well, we have 11 books in Mandarin Companion. We currently have, what is it, John? We have 3 level 2 and 8 level 1 books. The level 1 standard uses 300, draws from a base of 300 characters. The level two standard is a base of 450 characters. So we have a lot of popular stories, like we have The Secret Garden, we have a Sherlock Holmes novel, we've done Journey to the Center of the Earth, we did Great Expectations, which turned out to be so long, we divided it into two books. and so that's a little bit about the stories we have in the series. We're also right now, what we've really found is that even our level one can be quite a bit difficult, because you need to be at an upper elementary proficiency. A lot of study for a couple of years before you're ready to read these books. Right now we're working on a lower level. Internally, we're calling it level zero. We don't have quite a good name for it yet, but it's going to be 150 character standard. And we hope that that's going to make greater readers much more accessible to a wider range of learners. But Manor and Companions, it's been really fun to do this, because what's also interesting about what we're doing is that we're going to different conferences and stuff, is that we're with exclusion of maybe just a couple other companies, there's none of the other publishers that I'm aware of, which are, owned and started by foreigners, by non-Chinese. And I originally thought that that was maybe kind of a detriment, but I found that it's been kind of our advantage, because with the whole series is that we really understand the learner perspective. We know what it's like to crawl through the trenches and have to learn Chinese and the problems sometimes are the challenges with learning and the cultural aspects and sometimes how it's taught versus, how we actually learn it. And that's been a very, very exciting thing for us. And that's what we're looking forward and how moving Manor Companion forward is making sure that we hold to that perspective and make sure we keep everything with the learner in mind.
Is there anything we haven't asked you that...
Anything else you'd like to cover or...
Actually, one thing I'd like to say is if you have any ideas for stories that you think would be really good to be converted into a Chinese graded reader, we're always listening. We're pulling from the public domain, so it's classics. And we've actually looked through a ton of different stories, and Jared always gets on my case because I reject everything. Like, no Jungle Book. We're not adding in like 20 characters just for animals. No Jungle Book. Stuff like that. But we're always looking for new ideas. Like, one of my favorite books of ours is a level one called Country of the Blind. And it's, I guess technically it's sci-fi. But it's by H.G. Wells. And so it's got, name recognition by the author, but the story itself is not super famous. But, a lot of our readers really like that one. So we don't only do super famous books, and there's some really cool stories that are just waiting to be discovered, I'm sure.
We interviewed an editor.
I was going to bring this up.
I think it's our episodes 8 and 9 or 7 and 8. And he gave us a lot of interesting insights from that perspective and what works, what wouldn't work. And
basically, he had... The
algorithm,
the death dates of every famous author memorized, and was adding how many years until public domain. I don't know, 50,
70.
Oh, yeah, Jared does that for our team.
So
He mentioned H.G. Wells too, I think. But one thing he mentioned was nonfiction or really good stories that actually happened, like he was talking about the Elephant Man. I think.
I know that. Yeah, that looked at that one.
Yeah, he said that worked really well. He was always looking for these stories that actually happened and could interest the readers. I recently read a graded reader about the expedition to the to Antarctica. The British and the Norwegians. There was a kind of a race, and then it's pretty sad because everybody dies at the end.
Spoilers.
But I'm thinking that was something that was I don't know. I was reading this really, I think it was the level 2 Penguin graded reader, and it was the language was really simple and everything. I it was just very, very easy, and with those few words, I'd still find it moving. So
that's neat.
Yeah, that could be something you might want to explore. I don't know.
Appreciate that.
So one other thing I was I'm
thinking about the characters, and they're not that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could work. One other thing I was thinking about, just I think it'd be interesting just to touch on, was that is about maybe the state of extensive reading, you know, in Chinese. And when I say this, it's not in China. It's for L2 Chinese learning, you know. What I've seen is that it's a little bit different than like English. English is a very mature market, as you could say. So the English schools have been around a long time, and they have their methods and methodology. And so sometimes I think getting it in is a bit challenging because, you know, the ER community has just, you know, 20 years ago, it's not nowhere near what it is right now. But in China, Chinese, it's still really developing right now. And so I think that there's a real hope that ER could in the future become a greater component of Chinese learning than what it is in English. Just because we're getting in earlier in the development of the market. And we're already, I've been working with different curriculum providers and stuff to start introducing graded readers into their platforms. And so it's my real hope that, you know, we've seen how extensive reading in Chinese can, you know, really get some breakthrough results, and that's exciting. My hope is that, you know, we would love to be involved or help out with some, you know, academic research, you know, in extensive reading in Chinese, to help promote the growth of this, because I know that the more it's integrated in any language learning, there's just going to be better results. People are going to improve fluency. In fact, that's just is that you. I remember I read an academic paper once. Is that there was something I took away from this. She says something like fluency now, and that's how I like to describe it sometimes to people. Is that you can become fluent now in what you know, not. You know, and so fluency isn't some, you know, goal 10 years down the road. Now I'm fluent. You know, no, it's like if you only know 500 words, let's get you fluent in those 500 words. And that's what this is doing for Chinese learners. And the ER is doing for any learner all around the world who's actually doing it. So it's exciting. It's exciting, I think, time to be in Chinese education. And hopefully we're trying to really, like I said, spearhead this and really make ER a more integral part of Chinese learning.
Noted.
Great.
So academics out there, if you've got a research idea, contact us here at Manner Companion. We'd love to talk to you.
So thanks, Jared and John.
John, that was wonderful.
Yeah.
First, we thanks just for reaching out to us. We really appreciate just having been sent an email. And we encourage any listener who feels they have a story to tell or anything they want to share about ER, whether it's in English or in Chinese, in any language, please do send us an email and you'll likely be on the show.
We're not that strict.
Yeah, and I think the conversation we just had was really valuable. I enjoyed it, and I felt encouraged and motivated more than anything else. Yeah. Jared was really articulate and talking about, I don't know, the strong points of VR. He sold it to me again.
So are you going to grab some Japanese graded readers?
I ought to. I'm so invested in reading some fantasy novels in English right now. You know, I got some books I can't put down once I finish those.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, maybe next week.
That was really nice. And I'm thinking there's a lot of room for debate. I mean, this approach where you take a Western story and then localize it in China, and as I mentioned before, the issue of giving the reader something easy to read. And at the same time, I've got this other voice saying, "What about the cultural aspects?
Right.
If you do just that, you're not getting to learn much about the Chinese culture."
Yeah, I think.
Right.
So, I mean, I think the answer is, I mean, this is me, my personality, but a balanced diet of both.
Yeah, yeah. Reminds me of somebody who likes balanced language courses.
Guilty. So taking a look ahead, we hope our next podcast, our next episode, won't be so long in the future. We have a couple interviews scheduled, and so we'll be back soon.
Yeah, and not just any interview. We will finally have Rob Waring.
Yeah.
And then I'll keep the other one a secret.
But. Yeah, we've been hoping to have Professor Waring on the show since the beginning of our show. So we're really looking forward to that, and we hope you are too.
Yeah, if you have questions for him, just send us an email.
Yeah, send an email, leave comments on the show notes, and we'll be sure to check them.
By the way, we are, what's our email address? That's
exrpodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Still got it.
Yeah. And we are at erpodcast.wordpress.com and on iTunes.
And on iTunes. So, yep. Thanks. That's all for today.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Yeah. Happy reading.
Happy reading.